Hey everyone, welcome to Garden Fork Radio. You're here with Aaron and Eric. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing, Eric?
I'm good. Just had some really good tacos.
I'm envious.
Yeah, there's something about, you know, everyone's always like, oh, these are the best tacos. I'm like, my neighborhood is a giant Latino neighborhood, and they have the best tacos, so there you go.
And once you have a really good, real taco, you can't go back to any other kind of taco.
Yeah, these are straight up. They have a little bit of guacamole, a little bit of onion, and some sort of protein, and a green sauce, and radishes, and limes. And if you have certain kind of pork tacos, I think tacos carnitas, some places will put a slice of roasted pineapple in the taco.
Oh, yum. I bet you that's great.
Yeah, it's living. But anyway, we're here today. Aaron is from the blog The Impatient Gardener. If you want to follow her, she's on Facebook and Twitter and The Impatient Gardener. And today we asked on the Garden Fork Facebook group, which is a new Garden Fork group. I'll link to it in the show notes. There's 550 people there now.
It's fantastic. And it's a great group of people, too.
Yeah, I think people that are Garden Forkers are generally in the positive category.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we asked about garden myths. I just said, hey, next week, Aaron and I are going to talk about dispelling garden myths, and a bunch of people ask questions, and I'm like, oh, well, here we are.
That's great.
Do you have any thoughts about garden myths before we dive into this?
I do have some thoughts about garden myths. So my thought on garden myths is that there are a lot of myths that have sort of become traditions. And I think that gardening is a lot about tradition, and I think that that's really important to gardening. I mean, a lot of people connect with gardening because their grandparents did it, or their parents did it, or, you know, they were raised in a garden. And I think that's one of the kind of special things about gardening. So when you sort of dispel some of these myths, I never want to sort of take away from the tradition side of things. So, I mean, some of these things probably aren't going to hurt. I don't think they're going to help, and I think we'll talk about some of those that won't help. Some of them won't hurt anything, though. So, like, if your grandma always planted her roses and stuck 3 eggshells, coffee grounds, and a banana peel in the hole, and then turned around and did a dance and sang happy birthday or something, and she had beautiful roses, none of that's going to hurt your roses. So go ahead and do it that way if that's special to you and you think it works. I don't think there's any science that's going to say that it works, but if it works for you, it's not going to hurt. So I think sometimes, you know, we go into these things about what works and what doesn't, and I think it's important to know what works and what doesn't, but there are things that won't hurt, and if you feel better doing them, people should just do them.
If it feels good, do it.
It's what they say.
Don't you like it? You have this deep, thoughtful thing, and then Eric comes out and goes, if it feels good, do it. Yeah, there was a couple of them here, and I've also found this, it can be difficult to tell people in a diplomatic way that, no, that's not the way to go about gardening, you know?
Right.
So a lot of times I just don't say anything. I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting. Let's move on.
I never want to do anything that makes someone not want to garden. So if it makes them, you know, so I would never want to do anything to dissuade them, because I think that even if you screw a few things up, the benefits you get from gardening or from growing your own food are so much better than not doing it all, that I hate to ever, you know, do anything that would make someone feel bad about what they're doing.
Cool. Well, we're not going to make people feel bad today. We're going to answer some questions. One of them about whether you can use treated wood in gardening, using eggshells to deter snails and slugs. Does Irish Spring soap deter deer? Any others, Aaron?
Yeah, we're going to get into Epsom salts, which is like a huge pet peeve of mine.
I saw that and I was like, okay. Let's start with Epsom salts then. What's your? I see videos on YouTube about Epsom salts will make your tomatoes be amazing.
Epsom salts will, I mean, somebody commented about this on the group, and I said that I think there is an Epsom salt lobby that goes out on Pinterest and makes all these pins. Because if you believe what you read, Epsom salt will do everything. It'll make tree stumps disappear. It'll make you have great tomatoes. It'll kill a bug. It'll do everything. And in most cases, it really does none of that.
It'll probably clean your teeth too.
But. Oh yeah, and I think somebody said it washes your dishes or something at the end of the day. But that's almost sort of the mythical status that Epsom salts has gotten to. I don't know where any of this came from, but the deal with Epsom salts is that basically it's just magnesium sulfate. It's mm-hmm. magnesium. So if your soil is lacking in magnesium, or you're growing a plant that is has a lot of magnesium in it. And I found some examples of those, which are three of them that most people would know would be poinsettias, chrysanthemums, and gardenias. Mm-hmm. Then there might be some benefit to adding Epsom salts because there would be some magnesium intake that would be helpful. But the fact of the matter is that most soil doesn't have a magnesium deficiency. And if it does, it's often because the soil is acidic. And so you're actually better off to treat the pH of the soil and add some lime to it to try to get your pH of your soil a little bit more in balance.
Right.
Then you are to go start randomly adding Epsom salts to your soil and your garden, your planting holes, and God knows what else.
I have a sentence from Wikipedia. The advantage of Epsom salts or magnesium sulfate over magnesium soil amendments, such as dolomitic lime, is its high solubility, which also allows the option of foliar feeding. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
So it's a inexpensive, Epsom salts is an inexpensive delivery device for magnesium.
Right. So basically what I'm saying is that most soil doesn't have a magnesium problem. And, you know, Epsom salts probably isn't going to hurt much, to be honest with you. A lot of it certainly would. But you can get into trouble when you start sort of blindly amending soil because you think it may have some problem without any concept of what's really going on in your soil. So, you know, you go to the first step is really to get a soil test. And I know that sounds super boring, but I think they're interesting. They're easy to get, and you can do them usually through your university extension office is the best way to get those.
Yep.
They're cheap. They're like $15. And at least that's what they cost by us. And I imagine they're about the same most places. And that gives you a real picture of what's going on in your soil. Because if you do just start randomly throwing amendments into your soil without any concept of whether that's necessary or not, that's when you're going to run into problems of really throwing the whole balance of your soil off kilter.
Yeah, especially like I have raised beds and for my vegetable gardening, and I've assembled them in different years and gotten different garden soil for almost every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to do soil tests for each one and figure out how to improve them.
Yep.
Because they're visually completely different. And I'm always like, oh, I'll just spread a little bit of this time-release organic fertilizer on there. Mm-hmm. But I'm realizing I should probably figure out what's in there first, you know?
Right. And I think that's a good idea. You know, the other thing with Epsom salts is it's also part of a very popular weed killer, or so-called organic weed killer recipe. And I think it's vinegar and Dawn and Epsom salts. Epsom salts does nothing in that equation. The only thing that really does anything in that weed killer equation is the vinegar portion of things. And there's some other stuff about that too, but that's really, so save your money on your Epsom salts and keep it to soak your swollen ankle in or something, because it's really not doing anything.
Yeah, there are some medicinal uses for Epsom salts, and the original name came from a very salty spring in England, of all places.
Interesting. So it's a place in England named Epsom?
I will find it here. Don't you love this, how we're prepared we are? commonly called Epsom salts, taking its name from a bitter saline spring in Epsom in Surrey, England, where the salt was produced from the spring that arises from the porous chalk of the North Downs meets the non-porous London clay. All right.
There you go. And that's why Epsom is capitalized, in case anyone was curious.
There you go.
Because it's named after a place. Anyways, interesting. So that is a really big pet peeve of mine, is the Epsom salts thing. Bottom line is, you know, yes, it will help in very rare occasions. And no, it's probably not going to hurt unless you start using a whole bunch of it. But it's really just unnecessary.
There you go. We have one from Michelle. There was someone on the group, the Garden Fork. It's called Garden Fork Q&A on Facebook, by the way. And I'll link to it in our show notes here. But one person posted about growing, I believe it was potatoes, in old tires. And the idea is you could stack the tires for like a hilling method. It would hold the soil in as you hill the potatoes. And a couple people voiced some concerns about that. And Michelle asked here, I would like to know if the tire slash cancer thing is true. Because a couple of people were worried, well, if you're using old rubber tires, which are made from petroleum products and other things, whether there would be some leaching from the tire into the garden soil. And I couldn't find anything unbiased as an answer for that.
I did find a couple of sources for some information on that. And what I found was that short term, there's not really a problem with it. It actually isn't necessarily, some plants won't like it because it will cause, because of the black, will cause the soil to heat up beyond a point where some plants are going to be happy with that situation. Early on in the season, that'll be great, but you get to the middle of summer and it actually could get too hot. But from a chemical situation standpoint, short term is okay, but these things do biodegrade over time. And that's where the problems come in. So the source that I found said that long-term, the rubber can degrade and release zinc, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, which are carcinogenic, and other bad petroleum-based things. So, you know, if you're going to grow for a season in these, I think that's, from what I'm reading here, it's from a chemical standpoint, that's probably okay. Now, personally, I wouldn't do it because I tend to err on the side of being ultra cautious about those things. But the evidence that I saw, the research that I was reading, suggested that short term it's okay, long term maybe not such a good idea.
And also, you can recycle tires easily nowadays, and they do reuse them. They melt them down and use them for other products.
Right. There's actually a whole controversy about rubber mulches, which are made from recycled tires for exactly this same reason, in terms of what is leaching out of them.
My biggest concern would just be overheating the soil.
Mm-hmm. Really. And I think in the short term, that's the bigger thing to worry about.
Yvette asked, do I have to wash, microwave, and grind eggshells before I add them to my compost heap?
Well, here's what I found out about eggshells. For compost, no, I don't. I just throw the eggshell. I certainly don't wash. I don't monkey around with that stuff. I just throw them in there with the rest of the compost, the veggie kitchen scraps, and throw that all in my compost bin. They seem to break down pretty quickly in my compost pile. If you want them to break down faster, of course, grinding anything will make it degrade quicker. So you certainly can grind them if you want to, but you certainly don't have to, as far as compost usage goes.
Is there a caveat to that?
There's all sorts of things about using eggshells in the garden. And interestingly enough, so one of the things that I have always thought was maybe not true was this idea of putting eggshells in a planting hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I had always thought that was not something that was true. Well, I did a little research into that. Turns out I'm a little wrong. One of the sources that I used for to look into some of this stuff is there's a great book, and it's called The Truth About Garden Remedies by Jeff Gilman.
Uh-huh.
And he does, in addition to consulting scientific studies, he also did a few of his own studies in the process of writing this book to really try these things out. And he did an experiment with eggshells in which he actually boiled the eggshells and then used the water from the eggshells. And then he did some kind of nutrient analysis. And he actually did find some important micronutrients in that water. So he didn't actually use the eggshells themselves. He actually cooked them down and used the water from them. And there actually were some helpful things in there. So there is something to that. His idea behind boiling them was that it would take so long to basically have those eggshells break down enough to get the micronutrients out of them that he felt it was a quicker and better method to just boil them and get that stuff.
Yeah, I put them in the compost and then they shove their heads between the slats of the compost bin and eat the eggshells.
Nice. Well, it's not going to hurt them. I give my dogs eggs all the time, whole raw eggs. That is a discussion for another time. The other thing about eggshells is there was another person, I think, who had a question about using eggshells to deter slugs and snails.
Yes.
And from that same book that I mentioned, Jeff Gilman's book, he did some tests on that too. And it turns out it does absolutely nothing. No effect whatsoever.
Yeah, diatomaceous earth is, if you're looking for kind of a natural repellent for slugs, that seems to work pretty good. But you have to use a lot of it, and you have to make a perimeter of it.
Yes, I made little rings around my plants, and when it rains, you need to reapply it.
Yeah.
So.
Or what kind of animals eat slugs? Birds? Turtles?
Sure. Sounds good. I mean, hedgehogs, I know, do, but I don't think we have hedgehogs around here.
No, so. Thankfully. What's next, Aaron?
Do you want to talk about the raised lumber for raised beds and gardening?
Yeah, actually, because I'm about to rebuild some of my raised beds, and I'm going to make a new video about it because I have some improved methods. And I actually bought some of the new type of pressure treated lumber to use, and it's going to be in a vegetable garden, and I'm okay with using it that way. So I actually did some research here instead of Aaron, or I'm sure Aaron did some as well, but on finegardening.com there's an article, "Are pressure treated woods safe for garden beds?" And the authors asked Sally Brown, who is a research assistant professor of soils at the University of Washington. And she says that, and they're summarizing here, "As for the new copper-based wood treatments," which is the kind I bought, "Brown believes the actual risk is minimal. First of all, if plants take up too much copper, they will die before a gardener can eat them. And in addition, if homegrown vegetables make up a small percentage of the diet, exposure to any metal taken up is insignificant. Do not use copper near ponds or streams because it is toxic to aquatic life." So there you go.
There you go. One of the sources that I looked into said you're probably going to end up with more copper in your garden if you have copper pipes than from copper leaching out of the newly type of pressure treated wood.
Yeah, and copper is used as a fungicide in vegetable gardening anyway.
It is, absolutely, yep.
So I thought that was interesting. So I am going to use the new copper treated wood for my garden. The last ones I made, which is about 10 or 12 years now, I took regular like southern pine and I coated them with linseed oil, and then I built them and I threw dirt in there, and they have lasted at least 10 years. And if you dig into the side that's touching the soil, they're starting to get wormy and fall apart, but the exteriors have been holding together until this last winter. Because the soil heaves a little bit, you know, in the raised bed. Mm-hmm. And the brackets, I used cheap metal shelving brackets to hold them together. And the brackets are like almost brand new. Hmm. And I just used cheap drywall screws, and they're fine as well. Because everyone's like, oh, you need to use outdoor coated screws. I'm like, you know, it's just a garden bed. You know, it's not right. Structurally significant. So it was kind of an interesting kind of archaeological dig as I took apart one of them and I saw what lasted and what didn't. And the screws and the brackets I could reuse, and the wood is okay. And I could burn that wood in a bonfire or something. You don't want to burn treated wood. So
when we built our raised bed, and I think that is probably about 8 years ago now, we just used regular plain pine, and I didn't know about the linseed oil thing, but I think that's an excellent suggestion. So it's just plain untreated pine, and it's still in pretty good shape too. I mean, granted, I live in Wisconsin, so it's not an area where, I mean, there are areas in the country where you're going to go through wood a little quicker, but so far it seems to be holding up well. It's certainly holding all the soil in, so that's really what I worry about.
Yeah, the only caveat here is that I don't know if it still exists, but pressure-treated wood had a bad rap because it was treated with arsenic.
Right. And so you'd want to make sure that if you were going to use a pressure-treated wood, that you're buying the new stuff and you're not messing around with – I don't know when they stopped using the arsenic pressure-treated wood, but you'd certainly want to make sure you've got newer wood so that you don't even have to worry about that.
And where I bought the wood, all the wood has a barcode on the end of it. And it says on that label that it's a copper-based – it's some kind of brand name. And there was a sign next to the pressure-treated lumber that said, oh, we're using the eco-friendly treatment for this kind of wood. So, perfect. And then they use the word copper in there somewhere. So that's their, that's what you're looking for.
Yep, good. So the other thing I wanted to talk about was hydrogels. And these are these little water retention beads.
Crystals,
yeah. And – the idea is that you incorporate them into a planting mix, and sometimes you can even buy potting mixes that already have them incorporated. And I never really knew what to think about those. But then this is another one of those Pinterest myths.
But so I looked into this a little bit. Well, again, the source that I consulted for that was Jeff Gilman's book, and he did a bunch of tests with this. And he found out that they made absolutely no difference. Yes, those crystals will retain that water, but the plants can't take that water back up again. So there is no benefit whatsoever to using these.
Wow.
Whether they come in a jar, or they come in a diaper.
So the diaper thing is a big thing on Pinterest.
Yes, there's a lot of pins on Pinterest that will tell you to, for cheap, because they are kind of expensive. These hydrogel crystals can be expensive. You get a tiny little jar of them, although they expand to be huge. But if you would like them less expensive, they tell you to open up a diaper, and because I guess it's the same sort of thing they use to make for diapers. I don't know.
Who'd have thunk?
Yeah. So that's the only other one that I had.
Well, cool. The last one I have is whether Iris Spring soap will deter deer, and no, it won't.
No, actually, well, interesting. I'm just going to tell you one other thing. I actually have a bunch of other sources that I consulted for some of these things, but all the ones we've talked about have come from Jeff Gilman's book. It will work. Actually, any soap will work for a very short period, and that's the caveat with almost any deer repellent. First of all, nothing will work if deer are hungry enough.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what you have, although other than, you know, maybe a shotgun, nothing will work other than that. But nothing works for a very long time. So yes, soap, but it might be more of a situation where the deer are like, well, that's weird. I'm a little scared of that. I'm not going to go near it. But then it doesn't work. He did do some studies that showed that the deer repellents that have essentially egg putrescence in them tend to work a little better.
Hmm.
I, for many years, made my own deer. I have a huge deer problem at my house. And for many years, I made my own deer repellent. And it worked pretty good. And it was relatively inexpensive to make. It wasn't easy to apply, so I wasn't good about applying it frequently enough, and therein lies the problem. You got to be on top of it. So I have found that if you are really going to try to do some sort of deer repellent, you have to get out there before the deer ever walk into your yard, because you got to get it the first time before they even think about it, and you have to repeat frequently, and you certainly have to do it after a big rain.
Yeah, that's my – well, that was really kind of my point with the Irish Spring thing, was that at first it's just going to smell odd, but then the smell goes away, or they become acclimated to it, and then they come over and munch anyway. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Well, cool. Well, clearly you're like the Garden Fork researcher. You can have that title.
Oh, hey, I want to give two more sources that if people want to look into some of these myths for themselves, or if they see something and they think they should try it, places they can check before they just go start throwing stuff in their garden.
Yeah.
One is that book that I mentioned, Jeff Gilman's book. There is a blog called the Garden Professor's Blog, and there is also a Facebook group of the same name that has a lot of information, and it is what it is. It's all science-based research. They, on the group, They get a little picky if someone tries to introduce something that doesn't have like a study behind it. But it's a good way to just kind of see what the science behind things is. And also, I always tell people, you know, if you're going to start searching the internet to see if any of this stuff is true, you know, usually a website with the .edu suffix at the end, generally that's perhaps a little bit better source to consult than just some random ones.
Right. You can find whatever answer you're seeking on the internet. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
Those cures for pattern baldness I'm looking for, you know. I get some weird spammy email. I don't know if everyone else does, but I get some weird stuff.
Well, if you find the cure for male pattern baldness, I'm sure the Garden Folk Bunch might be interested in giving it a try. You never know.
Well, cool. Well, I think that'll be our... I want to hear more about garden myths. You can ask us at radio@gardenfork.tv, or you can check out our new Garden Fork discussion group. It's a closed group on Facebook, which means that you have to ask to join. And we're just doing that to keep out the spammers and making sure that people really are who they are. It just makes maintenance a lot easier. And you can actually post questions or pictures. One lady posted a picture of her dog, and there's like 50 other people that posted pictures of dogs, which I really liked. So
I think that's great. I can look at people's dogs all day long.
Yeah. All right. So, Aaron, thanks for taking your lunch hour to be on the show. Will you come back? We're going to talk about your home improvement project with a deadline.
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Eric.
All right. We'll see y'all later. Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com.